Make a confession.
Make a confession.
I don't like this song.
Wow, this is crazy. This is crazy.
Oh, never mind.
Never mind. Never mind. I surprised you. I've surprised you. This is actually kind of an iconic one, and I was kind of regretting not putting it in my top five.
It's just one of those, like, most iconic Act Two openers.
Yes.
Maybe of all time. Maybe the most iconic. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're back with another ranking episode, and this time we're talking all about Act Two opening numbers. Now, we've kind of had this on a list for a while, and I feel like it's because we thought that there were so many good ones. But going through, I'm like, are there? I don't know.
I agree. I had a bit of a hard time picking out the best. Even the ones I have as the best, I do think they're great, but I don't know if this is the top category for me. None of these were like, well, not none. Some of these are very inspiring, but I think, okay, I have theories. Let's get into my theories right off the bat. So I think they're in a really difficult spot in the show, in that the audience has just had a break. The audience has just been like ordering drinks at the bar. They've been unwrapping their candies. They're eating in Canada like a Haagen-Dazs. Do they do that in the States? I don't know. In Canada, we always get a Haagen-Dazs at intermission.
There is ice cream in the States, but most people are drinking in the States, which is wild because of the price of the alcohol there.
Oh my God, it's crazy. So I feel like the Act Two opener, a lot of times does not contain anything important because people are still getting back to their seats.
It's not like a filler plot driven, sometimes, but sometimes. Not usually.
So yeah, it's maybe a big dance number or maybe kind of like a character moment, because everyone's still like shuffling through their seats, getting back to their seats, finishing their ice cream, finishing their drink, waiting to get in from the lobby. So they have to fit into the story, but a lot of times they don't have the main characters in them, or a lot of times they're just kind of mood setting numbers because you don't want your audience to be missing an integral part of the story while, you know, someone two rows ahead of them is like, excuse me, sorry, excuse me, sorry, excuse me, excuse me. So yeah, they kind of are weird in my opinion.
No, I agree. I think like as we go through them, there will be definitely some on the list that like kind of break that mold, but it is true. Like you're always going to have people that like as soon as the Act Two opener song ends, you have like a sea of people coming through the aisles to find their seats because they were too busy like in the lineup for the bathroom. So it can't be something that's like, oh my God, we've just solved this big plot point because 20 people just missed that. So yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I wonder if it's hard to write. The Act Two opener, like where does this come for a composer when they're writing a show? Is it something that they're just like, oh whatever, it's a filler song, let's get it out of the way? Or is it like, oh, this is actually really difficult to think of because I can't use it the way that I would use other songs in a show?
Right. And usually at the end of Act One you've had this huge emotionally story heightened moment, and then this is what in the story is immediately following it, but you can't pick up exactly where you left off because your audience is just, they're not in it in that moment anymore. So you need to ease them kind of back in a little bit.
Unless you are Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, which literally Act One ends with like Topher picking up the shoe and like running off stage, and Act Two starts the exact same way. And I'm like, you know what?
That's love good. That. That's fun.
Yeah.
But it kind of repeats a little bit, right? Doesn't it? Like it overlaps. Yes. So they're like, okay, remember this? Remember we just did this?
And then it goes into like stepsister's lament.
This is what you missed on Glee. This is what you missed on Glee. Here, we got the shoe, we did this. Yeah, I was like looking at Cinderella and I was like, why would a fella wanna go?
Iconic. It's not on my list, but like it's an iconic Act Two opener.
I almost put it on my like long list, but I was like, this
guy. It's iconic only for like Anne Harada, but like.
Why would a fella wanna go? Marlon Mandel. Celine Dion herself. I was trying to explain, okay, so this is like a tangent, but I was trying to explain Titanic to my mother in the aftermath of the submersible situation.
What a week it's been.
Yeah, I was just trying to like explain Titanic to someone.
Imagine going to through the show that night.
Through the lens of the submersible. I cannot. Anyway, back to this.
Wild. Should we jump straight in?
Okay, yes, let's jump straight in. As our per usual per our ranking episodes, we've each picked five. We ranked them our fifth favorite to our first favorite will alternate one after the other, one after the other. We shall see. We didn't compare our list at all this time, so what if we have the exact same list? We shall see. Who knows? Maybe, maybe not. And then we'll talk about some other ones and maybe some ones that we think are bad and maybe some shows that don't have act two openers at all and why we think that is or what's going on there.
Also, we didn't, like, really make rules for this specific episode, mm-hmm. but I can probably speak for both of us that, like, an Untracked is not on either of our lists.
Untracked does not count. That's actually when you should be like, excuse me, sorry, excuse me, excuse me. And, yeah, I'll mention something. I was looking at Anne Juliet, right? And I don't think that show has an act two opener. The first song is, and act two is Love Me Like You Do, but it's kind of a brief comedy scene moment. It's not.
I would
really
argue, though, that it's such a funny act two opener.
Oh, it's so funny. But it's not, it's not in a traditional sense.
Wow, that just made me think, like, of people walking in. Like, imagine if you're sitting in the first row of Anne Juliet and, like, Romeo singing Love Me Like You Do. If I was Romeo, I would, like, sing it to the member of the audience that's walking to
love
their seat.
Love me like la, 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 me like you.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
And then it goes straight into what? Since You've Been Gone? So I guess that's, like, kind of... Since which, like, fits the mold of, like, big, dancey number to kick off.
Yeah.
Like that.
But there's,
act.
Like, a big, chunky scene first,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so I think, from my perspective, if there's, like, a short scene before the song, it still counts. But if there's a bigger scene before that song... Like, if we're really propelling story, then no, it's not the actual opener. It's just another song. That's maybe my only rule that I had.
Give us your number five.
Okay, so my number five, this is actually maybe my favorite style of act two opener, which is the big dance number. And so I'm going to go a little back. I'm going to go with Too Darn Hot from Kiss Me, Kate. So I think... A lot of act two openers owe themselves to this specific song and this specific style of opening act two. We're in rehearsal for a show. Maybe there's a song that'll come up later, but we're in rehearsal for a show and we do
a thing. I thought you said no jukebox musicals are on your list.
They're not. They're
what
not.
A lie.
I'm assuming it's on your list. I'm assuming it's on your list. But yeah, so like, not to say it, but I think that particular opening number that we'll get to later takes a lot from this opening number and
the
style of this opening number.
Yeah.
So it is a huge dance rehearsal, and then this is a place for the ensemble to show off their talents, their dancing, their like high energy, getting you back into the tone of the show. And a lot of times it has not the main characters as the stars of the number. Mm-hmm. It has kind of like our secondary characters leading this number and then our main characters coming after. Especially because if it's a big dance number, usually our leads are, you know, working behind the bar or like singers only.
Not dancing.
Not dancing.
Especially if
right?
you're a man. If you're a male lead,
exactly.
You're
behind
you're
the bar. You're washing a glass. That glass has never been cleaner. But like, yeah, so the opening number gets you back into the tone of the show. Specifically, it's high energy. It's like, pay attention, grabs your attention back. And it's just, and this song is absolutely so, so, so fun. And like, absolutely one of my favorites of a classic musical.
Cause it's too, too, too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too call on my baby tonight and give my all to my baby tonight.
And then you're back into the show and then your main characters can come out after. So it's done the job of making sure that the audience is no longer like unwrapping their candies, that they're focused and they're like, they can't look away so that you can get back into the story.
Okay, my number five, this is a show that like I don't love, but I think that there are moments from it that are great, including this act two opener, and that is King of New York from Newsies. I think sort of same kind of vein, a huge tap number.
Look at me.
Huge tap
newspaper.
Number. No, that's the other song. Seize the Day. That's Seize the Day.
Oh, you're right. You're so right. This is the tap number. You're so
right. This is the big tap number. But same thing, like Jack Kelly not there. Jeremy Jordan was not about to dance in this
He's
big tap
like,
number. But like, what's it like? Ben Fankhauser is in it. like Catherine Plummer leads this number. It's basically the part of the show when like her article that she's written about the strike, they're actually like looking for Jack is where we kind of like come back after this. And it's, she's showing them her newspaper article about the strike, how it made the New York, I think it's the New York Times, or whatever their like version of the New York Times is in Newsies. But like, wow, is it a good dance number? And it's such a good like comeback from intermission because you're like, oh, we really ended. The Act One finale is Santa Fe, which is like a very
solo emotional moment.
Yeah, like a big belty number with one character on stage, and then you come back from intermission with like all the newsboys like dancing their hearts out. They're dancing on tables. Like, it's so much fun. Look at me. Seeing it for the first time on tour, I was like, wow, this is a really great number. I also think the song is really fun. And it's a good, like, upbeat, like, boy singing song. But then when we watched that, like, the movie, like, film version of it, that's a song that they were able to, like, shoot so well because you could really get into, like, their feet. And, like, a big tap number is always great.
We love a tap number. Never go wrong with a tap number.
But yeah, I don't love Newsies. I know the internet loves Newsies, so...
Yeah, Newsies is, like, okay for me. I think there are great moments in it. But the best parts for me are always when you've got 30 boys on stage dancing. And King of New York is a great example of that. And
it's so tapping, fun.
You know?
So fun. Tapping. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, your number four.
My number four. We're back in the 80s. We're back with a Stephen Sondheim show. And
I knew this was going to be on your list.
Did you?
I think so.
I don't think you know... Anyway, okay, so this show specifically is notorious for having a huge tonal shift from Act 1 to Act 2.
Oh, never mind.
Never mind. I surprised you. Mm-hmm. Has a huge tonal shift from Act 1 to Act 2, and I think the Act 2 opener is key in doing that. And so it's hot up here from Sunday in the Park with George. So Act 1 ends with... they've painted this, the song is Sunday. They've painted this beautiful painting. You know, George has gone
that's
in
so
and taken the glass off the little girl.
Not that Newsies and Sunday are even remotely close to the same show, but both end their acts with a huge, like, beautiful ballad.
You're sobbing when they're singing Sunday.
Yeah.
You're like...
And Santa Fe.
And Santa Fe, yeah. It's the most beautiful thing. I remember when we saw Sunday, I will never forget, just like the first note.
The visual.
Sing, like, Sunday. I'm just like... weeping. And the visual of them creating the painting right in front of you.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful. Right? And so you're like, this is beautiful. This is art. This is creation. This is genius. And then Act Two opens with this song where the characters are complaining about being stuck in this painting and they're so hot all the time. And it kind of jars you out of what you experience in Act One and kind of introduces you into the world of Act Two, which again is a huge tonal shift from what has happened in Act One. And I think it's a funny like comedy song, and it's funny and it doesn't require a huge amount of choreography and staging because they're, for the most part, you know, they're stuck in their painting. They're in their spot. Yeah. They're not moving. So it's just, I think it works so well to get you into that space. Now we're in a gallery. Now we're seeing they've been in this painting for however many years, and now we're going to see the outside perspective of people looking at that painting with them stuck in it. And I think it just works so, so, so well to take you into Act Two and into the lives of these paintings.
It's hot up here and strange up here, no change up here forever. How still it is, how hot it is, and God, it is so hot.
I like the one in the light hat.
Hello, George. I do not wish to be remembered like this, George. With them, George.
And it's so fun. And it's emblematic of Sondheim's cleverness with music and with lyric and character. And I love it. I think it's great.
It is interesting because, like, it definitely does set you up for, like, wow, we're not really watching the same.
Yeah, sort this is of not George and Dot story anymore.
Yeah, but then we kind of go into like a really weird place in Act Two. So I don't even know that we end up with a similar story to how we started in Act Two. So like Sunday's
Act Two is an interesting show. Act Two is an interesting show. Act Two is very interesting as part of as a companion to Act One.
Yeah, because like I feel like you could argue that you could just end it with Act One because Act Two really doesn't. But then you're missing some like great songs. So I don't know. I want to see it. Like I know we saw it, but like yeah, I want to see it.
A more fully staged production.
And also maybe. Like one where we're in a different kind of audience. We were kind of like in the round. So I'd be interested to see it not in the round. I don't know.
I would of course love to see it again. Yeah, I think Act Two. It drags.
It does drag.
So I actually think of Sunday in the Park with George, and I don't know if the, everyone will understand this. Maybe they will. Maybe I'm not that clever. But I think of it and Into the Woods very similarly, because the Act One of both of those shows is such a fully formed story, and it ends with a finale, and then Act Two is almost a different show that's in conversation with Act One. It's like, okay, you saw this, and now I'm gonna come at it from a different angle, and I'm gonna approach it in a different way. And in Act and in Into the Woods, it's with, you know, the exact same characters, and you're kind of following up what happens after you've accomplished this, and you're kind of, and in Sunday in the Park with George, Act Two is about this artist who is in the shadow of this. Of George Seurat, or who is attempting to create art to match, and what happens if you are unable to do that, and what happens if you, like, if you're not able to achieve the greatness that you've set out to achieve. And so, in my opinion anyway, that's kind of what I see it to be about. And so I like, both of those shows to me, like, really speak to me, because I love that it's not like a traditional, like, full story arc structure. It's that you have this complete story and then another story that untangles the first story. And so, anyway, does that make sense?
Yes, there's a lot there. This show is like, could do like an essay on this show, I feel. Maybe a lot of like Sondheim pieces you could do a corresponding essay too.
I'm sure there are so many, and I'm sure what I've just said is like not even that original or unique, but that's just kind of how I see.
Why aren't theater like programs taking kids to see Sondheim shows and having them write papers about it? Maybe they are, but they're not here.
We've never been in a
We've never done that.
That's so true. Maybe we should. Maybe we should. For our next podcast. No.
It's been a while. It's been a while.
No homework. Anyway, what is your number four?
Okay, my number four. We're back with another boys number. I love this song. I love the show. And it is from Dogfight. It's Hometown Heroes, Ticker Tape Parade. So again, another Act One that ends kind of on like a somber ballad with Rose singing pretty funny after like the dogfight has happened. And then we open up with this like guys number of them like meeting these prostitutes and like Eddie not really like being a part of it. One, the vocal performance on this song is outrageous. The energy is like unmatched. Another like when I'll never forget, I like still think about that you weren't there, but like when Char and I saw this at Sheridan and like all of the boys lined up to like sing this song, it was just like, I don't know, there's something about like male harmonies that I don't think we get enough of these days, and when you get them, you like hold on to them because they're so good.
You're a goddamn hero. Can't you hear it, boys? You're a goddamn hero. Can't you hear it coming? I'm a goddamn hero. For the boys who stayed, hometown heroes, ticker tape parade.
This is one of my favorite, like, I feel like you feel the same, but this is one of, like, my favorite cast recordings, like, of all time. I think it's so well done. And this song really
Pasek
does have, like,
and Paul's best show.
Yeah. I know. We always say, like, we got to talk about them, but, like, nothing will top this. That's the problem.
I know. Yeah. We've kind of approached them in, like, many different
ways,
like, piecemeal ways, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, so this song is kind of just like the reckless, like recklessness of these like army bros, and then like Eddie just deciding that he doesn't want to be a part of it. But like, it's such a high energy song, and like I feel like a perfect way to open Act Two. But like, not so much, as we said at the beginning of this episode, like not a lot of plots happening here. You're just like watching mm-hmm. them have fun and like trying to sleep with this prostitute, and then the rest of the plot unfolds, and like how everything turns out later is discovered after this number. I'm like, what is the next song after this? And it's another fave, First Date Last Night. Yeah, so like, what a perfect run. Yeah. You know what? We're doing really well right now. We've done 4 songs here, no crossovers.
Look at this. I think it, who knows? Okay, let's see what happens next. Okay. Wow. My number 3. This is another one that is so tonally different from how Act 2 ended, I think intentionally, because the character who is singing the song is in the dark as to what's happened at the end of Act 2. So there's a bit of, the audience has this information that the character doesn't have, which makes this really fun, light song kind of really heartbreaking, but also it works as this kind of light moment before you go into the darkness that is kind of the rest of the show. So this is I Feel Pretty from West Side Story.
See the pretty girl in that mirror there.
What mirror where?
Who can that attractive girl be?
Which? What where? Oh,
such a pretty face, oh, such a pretty dress, oh, such a pretty smile, such a pretty me. I feel stunning.
I feel stunning.
And entrancing.
And entrancing.
Feel like running.
Feel like
and
dancing.
And lost.
I fall in love. I am pretty.
This I feel like West Side Story is in all of my lists, but yeah.
It was in your Act One finales too,
because the rumble, like those
the rumble
two songs,
is yeah
the rumble. So you know, okay, so actually
about, like looking at this list, I'm pretty sure my number one was my number one Act One finale, but we'll get to it when
that's
we get
crazy
to it.
That's so funny. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I think this was my number one. I don't remember anymore. I have to look back.
I think, but the rumble was your number one.
I want to be my number one. Yeah, so I mean, I love West Side Story. I did that like bracket on TikTok where you pick like the top 16 shows, and like West Side Story made it to the top for me because I just think it's a wonderful show. So this is actually interesting. So when we saw the West Side Story 2019-2020 production, the short-lived doomed production, that was a one-act version, and they actually cut this song because I think probably for many reasons, but I think the major reason is with the 90-minute version, you were kind of on a train. They didn't want you to get off. And
it's very like intense the whole time.
It was so intense, and they were just building that tenseness throughout the whole thing. Where and I Feel Pretty in there would have taken away from
it. Would have broken 100%
it, which you could have said you needed. I think they could have worked it in. I have ideas for how they could have done that, but
you should call up Evo Van Hove. Maybe
yeah,
we
Evo,
can revive.
Evo, why don't you just call Taylor up? But yeah, so when you have this super intense moment that happens at the end of Act One, then you break for 20 minutes, everyone's eating their Haagen-Dazs, and then you come back, and instead of picking up right in that intensity, you have Maria, who is still excited about this boy that she's met. She's feeling like love for the first time.
Well,
and she's
also
capturing
like,
that.
She doesn't know about
exactly.
like
she
the aftermath
know.
Of the rumble.
She doesn't know, which is what makes it so good, is because you as an audience know and she doesn't know. And so it's this light, happy, beautiful, pretty song that kind of describes this feeling of first love. And at the same time, you know it's all about crashing down. Like, it's this is dramatic irony to at its core, where the audience has more information than the characters on stage. And so there's like layers upon layers that you're reading into this song. And yeah, I think it works as well, because sometimes you need a little bit of a break, a little bit of, you know, lightness in a show, especially when it is almost 3 hours long, to make sure that you're not just like so, like, so it's not so, so, so heavy.
I do understand like why it wasn't there in the in the 2019, and then I had watched the original West Side Story obviously before we saw the like newer one, but like seeing the new version after watching the 2019 version, I was like, oh, I get it, like I understand why this
it's
wasn't
purpose.
There
it's purpose and why it wasn't there. Yes, if I So my
They consulted, right, with Sondheim to get, remove it? They must have.
Yes, because Sondheim did work on the Eva Van Hove Twin Harry production. He was somewhat involved.
And, I want to know his real thoughts on that.
I'm curious. He was open to change in his shows and adaptation, so that's maybe one of, like, this, not the only, like, one of the sad things is because while he was alive, you could consult him and ask, what do you think of this? How do you think of changing this? And now I feel like a lot of his shows are going to be frozen in time as to what the last version was. But, so for my perspective, that 2020 West Side Story, I think we just needed to hear more from Maria. We needed to hear more from her inner thoughts. It was a very, like, boy-heavy show, which is great. And, like, the rumble was so good, so intense, oh my God. So crazy.
There, like, as wild as that was, there are moments of that show that I actually think were, like, genius.
Yeah, yeah. Think about,
like, I think all the time. Like, it's one of the shows that is, like, always, like, rotating in my mind.
But I just wanted to hear more from Maria. And I think it could have been as simple as having her a cappella waiting for Tony, like, dancing around her bedroom or something.
Yeah, like, when
and singing,
like,
a few bars of that song. Just a nod, and also...
Yeah.
We wanted... Like, I want to understand how she's feeling, and I don't know if we ever quite got how she was feeling.
Until, like, the very end when she has that whole, like, monologue with the gun. But, like, yes,
I
want to
see her... How, like, we need to understand how in love she is that drives her to her actions that come after.
Yeah, and, like, one of the only, like... sets in quotation was like her room where she was sewing, so they definitely could have done something like in that room as opposed to like the rest of the show that was screens really only except for like Doc Shop, but like a lot of it, like they built that set like for her. She had a place like for herself, so like we could have used it there. But
kind of throwing back to when they sang together, or when they had the scene together earlier, kind of her maybe recreating.
He's like dancing with her in that room.
Yeah, exactly. She's
like dancing with a dress or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Her kind of recreating those things by herself. Evo! But at the same time, like, that show was...
tight.
It was tight. So, yeah. But there were... Obviously, it wasn't a perfect show. Like, there are things, but... And one of those things was I just needed to hear more from her feelings to understand her motivations moving forward.
Right.
And without that song, you kind of miss, like, you know, she literally sleeps with this man after she finds out he's killed her brother. And
it's jarring when I Feel Pretty is in the show.
But you understand she's like the exuberance she's feeling about this man and like the feelings that she has for him. And without that song, you don't quite get that. So anyway, I love this introduction into Act Two of I Feel Pretty for West Side Story.
All right. Okay, my number three. I feel like if you were to like poll an audience, this would probably be on everyone's list of their favorite number from an Act Two. And it's from a show that we're about to see in a couple weeks. And it's Seasons of Love from Rent.
Moments so dear, 525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year? In daylights, in sunsets, in midnights, in cups of coffee, in inches, in miles, in laughter, in striving. 525,000.
What's so interesting
this
to
is...
me.
This is an overlap here. This is an
okay.
Overlap.
I was wondering because I didn't know if you liked Seasons of Love. You know,
I think mine's a little bit.
We skipped
higher.
It from our love song category because we were both like we don't think that this is really a love song, but a lot of people would consider it.
We had stronger rules for the love song category. It's a little bit higher for me, so maybe I'll wait.
Okay, great. Oh my God, is it your number one? Okay, we'll wait. Okay, so I. Kind of like, so this is kind of like the opposite. I feel like Act One ends on such a high of La Vie Boheme. Like, we're dancing on tables, like, so much is going on. And then we come back to this moment on stage when everyone is just like standing in a line singing this beautiful song. But I think like the reason why I love it so much is it's like the last time we see them sing together before Angel dies. And it also, and it's at the top of the act. Like, we see them interact with each other, but they're really not like all singing together again until like the very, very end. But like Angel is already gone. It's just like such a beautiful scene. It's such a beautiful song. I think it's a very powerful scene and song, and nothing is really happening on stage. They're just standing in a line. There's like not really any set moments. And yeah, I can understand why it's higher on your list. But it's just, I think, again, what I said earlier, like if you were to poll an audience, I think everybody would have this probably at the top, if not at the top, somewhere in the middle of their list. It's just one of those like most iconic act two openers, maybe of all time.
Well, let's go into my number two. My number two is a song from a musical. This actually maybe goes against the rules that I've been talking about because this one is so dense with information. It does do a little recap.
Wow, I think this is about to be my number one.
Wow, this is so funny. Okay, it's so
maybe dense. I'm not sure.
It's so dense with information, but it does a little bit of a recap and it kind of, you know, resets you for act two because we have a couple character changes. Some actors who are playing characters in act one are playing different characters in act two.
Never mind.
So my number two act two opener is from the musical Hamilton. It's What Did I Miss?
So what did I miss? What did I miss? Virginia, my home sweet home, I want to give you a kiss. I've been in Paris meeting lots of different ladies. I guess I basically missed the late 80s. I traveled the wide, wide world and came back to this.
Can I make a confession?
Make a confession.
I don't like this song.
Wow, this is crazy. This is crazy. Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson.
I like it as a overall scene, but I'm also kind of like, meh.
So interesting. So
it's on my long list, but yeah.
It's on my long list. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What I think is so great about it is because Act One has been telling the story of, you know, the revolution and getting America to be a country. And Act Two tells the story, well, now we're a country. How do we do this? And it introduces some new characters. So this song does the dual duty of kind of letting you know what happened in Act One, introducing you to this new, very important character, Thomas Jefferson, who we haven't met before, giving you like a Cole's notes on where he's been and what he's about to do.
We've like heard his name, but that's it.
Yes, we've heard his name. Gives him a Cole's notes of where he's been and what he's about to do, and also lets us know, okay, now we are about to govern this country. This is actually great. Sometimes when I talk about Hamilton, I'm like, this is actually so funny that we're so passionate about American history. Government.
We did not learn any of this in school.
No, maybe that's why it gripped us so much. Because this was like brand new information. Did not know who Alexander Hamilton was until Hamilton the musical came out.
And like when you're listening to and watching Hamilton, you're like, this is crazy.
Yeah, you're like, Thomas
like this happened.
And it's so high energy. And
I also feel like this song is like sometimes hit or miss for me. It really depends on the performance of the actor that's giving.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I've seen many
you're
that
so
I'm like,
right. Meh. You are so right. I feel like,
which is kind of hard for an act to opener if you don't like the way that it's
it's all on this actor's shoulders.
And I didn't love the way that it was played in Toronto, so I was kind of like skip.
I literally don't remember who played this.
I feel like you didn't really enjoy
I feel
either.
Like you're right that I didn't love it.
Like David's
And that's the thing. So I've listened to, for me, like so much of this is the cast playing. I've seen Hamilton 4 times right now, but the performance that I stays with me and I remember of this song is David Diggs' performance.
Yeah.
It's hard to, not hard to explain, but yeah, every time I see it and then I leave and then I'm like, David.
Truly for anyone that hasn't seen Hamilton or has seen Hamilton, like the Jefferson, what's the other, Lafayette track, I think is the hardest to match.
It's so true. He was giving such a specific performance. And Yeah, not because, everyone like, matched that. I agree.
Every time we've seen it, there's always been, like, a standout. This time for me, and I think for you guys, was Burr. Like, Burr. That was, agreed. Like, just as good as Leslie Odom Jr., but, like, no one has ever quite matched David, which is so hard.
No,
so
it's crazy. Well, I think so much of it was catered to his specific talents. Yeah. The fast rapping, obviously.
But even just his, like tone of voice.
Yes, yes. The kind of, I don't even know. But yeah, his tone of voice is so specific. Yeah, I just think this song does a great job of doing so much. It's so dense with information, and it gets you up to speed so quickly. And it's entertaining at that. And mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. what more could you ask for from an Act Two opener?
Yeah. Yeah, I really think my, like, love-hate with it is, like, the performance, which is so hard because it's the song itself is fun. And I do love what the ensemble is doing. They're doing so much in that.
They're always doing so much. The ensemble in Hamilton is always doing so much.
If we've said this before, but, like, if you are seeing Hamilton for, like, multiple viewings, like, really just watch the ensemble one time just to see how much work they're doing, because it's actually crazy.
This last time I saw it, I really was just like, what's going
ensemble
on
sniping
there?
Yeah,
what's
so was
going on
I
in the corner over here.
I know.
Oh, what's this set moment? What's this?
Because, like, you can, it's like, oh, I know what Hamilton's doing, but I don't know what this one girl is doing putting on a jacket in the very back corner. Like, I want to see.
I was really watching the costume changes this time.
No, I know, it's exciting stuff. Yeah. Okay, my number two, we have reached the moment. This is, I like, we've talked about it 1,000 times on this podcast. There has never been an Act Two opener that has made me as excited as this one has. And it's obviously Backstage Romance from Moulin Rouge. Normally, our rule is to not have jukebox musicals on here. And 24 hours ago, I didn't have it. But then we discussed very briefly today, and I put it on the list because I was like, oh, we're open to jukebox. How can I not put the song that actually made me feel everything when I saw it? As you said, very similar to the Kiss Me Kate mold. And I would kind of argue that, like, it does drive the plot a bit because you're kind of led to believe that in intermission, when we were all off living our lives in our version of the Moulin Rouge, Christian and Satine were together and Santiago and Nini were together. And now we're getting a glimpse of their romance. Mm-hmm. I think, like, one, we can talk about this for days, but, like, the song mashup is unbelievable. Like, it's so well thought out. I just, like, I always think back to this moment of, like, when we saw it for the very first time and, like, literally how we felt. But I want to know how the cast felt when they heard this for the first time and were like, so we're gonna do this, and then, like, you guys are gonna dance like this. It's just, like, the song's one thing. I think the way that it opens with the two of them sitting on the chair and, like, Christian, like, narrating that, like, another Backstage Romance was happening, brilliant. Then we get, like, the dancing, which is, like, some of the craziest choreography I've ever seen on stage ever. And not to mention, like, the lighting that's going along with it. It is so thrilling to see. And then, like, the end of that number when, oh my God, what is his name? Sar. But what's the character's name?
Toulouse-Lautrec.
Yes. When Toulouse is like, I have notes. Like, amazing. It's amazing. Like, there is literally, like, to me, honestly, this could be number one because I think it truly is a perfect Act Two opening number. And also, like, this is a show that literally is high after high after high after high. We've gone into intermission with Elephant Love Medley. We've come out of intermission with Backstage Romance. I'm, like, in another world right now. And then you stay on that track till the end of the show. Like, I've never heard from anyone that's seen this show, like, they're always coming out talking about this number. And if you read any, like, of the Broadway boards, like, everyone is talking about this and how phenomenal it is. So, yeah, what a great Act Two opener.
I truly feel we need to give credit to Sonia Taye, the choreographer of Moulin Rouge on Broadway, who is doing some of her best work ever in this show. I believe this is the first Broadway show she ever choreographed, so really absolute like, star.
Wild.
She's always been a star, but this is star-making for me on Broadway. And, yeah, so I think it does move the plot forward because you are kind of seeing the development of Christian and, oh, what was her name?
Satine.
Wow, crazy. Satine's relationship. You know, the beautiful stage pictures of them both being lifted and, like, reaching for each other. And when they throw Christian across the stage, they throw him across the stage. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. But, yes, it does kind of focus on the secondary characters of the Argentinian and
Santiago.
Santiago, yeah. Exactly. And it kind of focuses on their love story to kind of bring us back in. So, even if you missed this, which I wouldn't recommend you do, but sometimes you will see someone being escorted to their seat with a wine glass after this number is over.
And you're like, how dare you? Like, how dare you miss this?
Excuse me.
So it's like, can we rewind and watch that again?
I know. Even if you miss this, you know, you're not missing like a huge plot moment, but it does add so much to the story. And it kind of, it's like, hello, grabs your attention and puts you, your eyes straight back on the stage. Like, you cannot look away.
It's so interesting because I've now seen Moulin Rouge 4 times. The first time we saw it was like the craziest audience experience ever, because all of us were just like, what is going on here? But yeah. Then like the most recent time that I saw this, like the applause is still like, it does not stop for like 2 minutes after this number, because everyone that's seen it is like telling all of their friends about this number, because you're like ready to go. I'm like sitting beside my brother primed for this opening number, and he had seen it too. And then like Corey is sitting on the other side of the theater, and literally I remember at the end of this, I looked down the aisle, like across the theater over at Corey, who was just like looking at me and was like, yes, like thumbs up, like this is it. This is so good. It's just like, it's like, I don't even know the word for it. It's like energetic theater at its best. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, what a way to open your show. But also, like, yeah, hearing what we're saying, like, do not miss this if you're going to see Moulin Rouge and you think that like you need to line up for the bathroom and you're like, I'll just wait, I know they're
pre-order
the
your drinks at the bar. Pre-order your drinks at the bar so they're ready at this target.
This is like not to be missed. And no, I kind of absolutely love that, like, whenever they've performed this on the Olivier's, I believe. Mm. They've performed it a lot more in the UK, but I kind of love that they have not performed it like in the States. They're kind of like keeping the secret that like only if you go to the theater.
Video does not capture it the way
it really doesn't.
Which you can say for most theater, but I think really this song, it is not able to be captured properly. And it's something that I always talk about on this podcast so much that I love, like, storytelling through dance. Storytelling through dance is this song, is this moment. And like, so a lot of times when we do these ranking episodes, as you were saying, we eliminate jukebox musicals from contention. We haven't done that this time because just of the function that an act two opener has in a show is different than, let's say, like an I Want song or a love song that we've done.
Yeah, it's not like like you need to be able to like write this for a character type thing. Yeah, although this does feel like it could be written for these characters.
Yeah, the way it's been arranged so much, it has been written in a way
like rewritten
using
them,
yeah exactly, but using existing material and existing stories.
So good.
So yeah, absolutely. Okay we're at my number one.
Also, it's proud of us because we really only had one crossover.
I know what your number one is. Okay, I have a thought, but
oh, my number one, it's pretty obvious.
I have a thought, but we shall see. Okay. So, yeah, my number one here is Seasons of Love from Rent. And I think this might be surprising from me because I don't, like, super love Rent. I mean, I'm so excited to see it in a few weeks. But Rent, I'm kind of, like, met on. But the thing about this song is that it has transcended theater. It has transcended Broadway. It has transcended this show to just become a cultural moment. And that's why it has to be the number one for me. You know, again, we talk about the difference in structures between Act 1 and Act 2. And Act 1 of Rent takes place over a day and a half, basically.
Yeah.
And Act 2 of Rent takes place over a year. And Seasons of Love introduces us to that concept. It's how do you measure
a year?
And then we're about to show you. And the simplicity in the staging of it and just letting the voices and the music speak for itself, you know, we're at a point now where this song, you just hear that first piano chord and you're just already there because it has become so iconic. Think about the
really one of our karaoke. First, yeah, Carpool Karaoke, and then one of our first videos ever on Instagram was when we did the Rent Live episode, and yes. we did like oh a singing in the backseat of the car, and it's literally the first note of Seasons of Love, and it's me and you like, ah,
like, no, it's so true. It yeah. transcends so much. Even non-theater fans know yeah. this song because it's one, a great song generally, and also it works so well in the context of this show. I have like one weird thing about it. What do you think of it being at the beginning of the movie and not at the midpoint?
So I feel like that was literally just a gateway. It's like, you guys know this song, gotta put sure. it at the beginning of the movie so that you continue to watch all the way through.
Sure.
Like, otherwise, people are gonna be like, where is the one song I know from this movie? But I almost wish they did it twice.
So, yeah, so like, I actually understand why they put it at the beginning of the show. I get your reason, but my other reason is because it's kind of like outside of the story moment. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be weird to take that like break in the middle to have this like moment where staged people moment in the movie. So I understand why they did it so differently. I'm thinking back to Rent Live when they did Seasons of Love extremely differently, and they were kind of like walking around, right?
Yes.
And no, they staged it differently, staged it in a story way as opposed
had,
to the simple way.
Characters all around the yes. industrial set, from what I remember.
And I didn't necessarily love that, but I understood why they did that, because when you don't have a traditional act break, it's odd to have such a change in form for mm-hmm. one song. I think it's one of those songs that only works staged this way on stage. And when yeah. you try to put in a different form, it's kind of gets a little funky.
Okay, my number one.
Here we go.
Do you think you know what it is?
Okay, like, I'm looking at my list and I am leaning towards Thank Goodness.
It is Thank Goodness.
Okay. That was hard. That was a risky moment. Okay. Woo!
I thought when you were going into... What song were you just talking? Oh, what did I miss when you were talking about how like this kind of defeats the purpose of like a main character singing, giving us a lot of like background information? I was like, oh, she's talking about Galinda, but like, no, you were talking about Thomas Jefferson. So two
very similar people.
So yeah, I'm pretty sure my Act One finale's number one was Defying Gravity, and which if it was, this is crazy that my Act Two opener's number one is Thank Goodness, both sung by the two witches of the show. But I really do think that this is a song that gives Galinda her voice. And it's so interesting because, like, again, Defying Gravity is such a powerful way to, like, lead you into an intermission break. And some would argue that Thank Goodness is, like, not a great way to, like, come back, whether you, like, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of people that don't like the song.
It's a bit hard to listen to on the cast recording sometimes because it has so many different elements to it.
Yeah.
And musical styles and people into it. But yeah, the more I listen to Wicked, the more, like, I love this song and love certain moments of it.
This one kind of, like, breaks the format because, like, technically there's an on-track, but, like, it's at the very beginning of this song. It's, like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun before we, like, get into it. But it's basically, like, Galinda and Fiyero announcing their engagement, and also, like, everyone's trying to figure out, like, who this wicked witch is. Should we go after her? Like, what is whatever? But it's also what becomes like a very heartbreaking storyline of Galinda realizing that she's losing the love of her life in front of her eyes. And obviously it's that like bridges we cross, we never cross moment. It's really seeing Galinda in a different, like she's a totally different character than she was in Act One at the top of this act.
Yeah. Like at the end of Act One, you know, there was a fork in the road and Elphaba took one path and Galinda took the other path. And now Galinda is on this path that she's taken, and she's thinking about this other path that she has not taken. The bridges you cross, you didn't know you crossed. Like, she is thinking about what her other options would have been if she's made the right choice, but she feels stuck in this moment. And she's thinking about her friend who is on this different path, who she now has to, like, spurn publicly.
Well, because she's kind of, like, she's a public figure now. She's yes. Belinda the Good. And Alpha mm-hmm. has, like, made herself bad. It's so interesting. I was talking
to, they're publicly enemies, but they're best friends.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, also, her... The love of her life is in love with her. Like, it's so... There's a big love triangle here. I was talking to my coworker the other day about, like, what we were recording. Mm-hmm. And he was like, have you guys done a Wicked episode yet? And I was like, no, we're saving it for the movie. But it's true. We literally have not, like, deep dived
into the world of Wicked. Well, we did a Stephen Schwartz episode.
But we didn't get into, like, the nitty gritty of, mm-hmm. of the storylines of Wicked. I did do a Wicked episode with Patrick Flynn on the original cast podcast.
You did.
But yeah, I don't think it was like, definitely not the first time I saw Wicked, I was like, this is the song. But as I continue to listen to it, I'm like, this is the song.
There's a kind of a sort of cost. There's a couple of things get lost. There are bridges you cross, you didn't know you crossed until you crossed.
Because, like, Galinda is just so much more, like, she has so much more to her than most people think. She's not just, like, surface. You gotta dig.
So, as I've aged, I have really started to relate to Galinda more. Because, well, wow, I don't even know if this is true, but let's go with this. Like, when you're young, you see Elphaba, and you're like, she's so cool, she does all these things, and she's a
fly.
Star, and she's rebellious, and she stands up for what she believes in. Which I love. But with Galinda, like, as you become older and you just kind of go to work every day and you, like, I don't know, live your, like, normal life, I see in Galinda, it's like she has these ideas and these goals, but it's not all clicking into place the way she always thought it was going to. And her having to, like, grapple with that, I think is, like, a very relatable storyline for just, like, and, like, anyone in adulthood, you know, having these plans, having these goals, being, you know, when Galinda went to school, she was a star, she was so popular, and then when you get older, you have to, you know, fit all those things into the rest of your life and say, oh, this didn't actually go the way I thought it was going to, and now what do I do with that? And I think that's, like, a very relatable feeling. So as I've gotten older, like, Galinda, I've related to so much more.
Even just the lyrics, which are so simple, but the way... Honestly, we've watched a lot of compilation videos, and the inflection really does change everything
when you speak. When you speak, that thrill. You know, that and thrill. If that joy, that thrill doesn't thrill like you think it will.
And also,
if you get what you wanted, and it doesn't feel the way you thought it would feel.
To backtrack even that, the, like, I couldn't be happier simply, well, not simply. It's like, oh my God. Like, yeah. Ow,
it,
that
she
hurts.
Got what she wanted, but it wasn't quite so...
It wasn't easy. It's not how she thought it would be when she gets to this place. It's just like, oh no, it's actually not so simple just to be happy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm actually not happy. Like, that's...
Yeah.
But she can't say that because she's, like, yeah, but speaking the masses.
Why wouldn't I be happy? Anyway, I got everything I wanted.
I just think there is, like, so much to this song. We could dissect it, like, even more. Honestly, we could go, like, lyric by lyric and talk about how great this song is. But
that bridge.
That
full, like, Galinda solo moment.
There's a kind of a sort of... Like, it's just... Hot. It's... There's a couple of things get lost. There are bridges you crossed. You didn't know you crossed until you crossed.
No, my favorite
acting moment
joy,
is that thrill.
The spoken, that thrill.
With, like, whoever's singing it, sometimes, like, their voice breaks and you're like, oh, feel that. I feel that.
Like, you think it will.
Still.
And the way she flips her voice at the end to be, like, happy, and she's like, thank goodness.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay.
She's opera. She's going... Do you hear that? Do you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that. That's soprano. I heard that soprano pop out there. No, but it's true. She, like, she has this moment of weakness when she says to Fiera, like, fetch me a refreshment. And then she thinks about everything and has this moment of, like, oh God, this isn't what I thought it would be. But then it's like, got to turn it back on because the people are listening to my announcement. I'm like, you know what? I respect you. I respect you, Galinda. So,
yes. Yeah. Honestly, like, seeing them film what we think is that scene in the like
I know,
grainy drone I know. Videos. Watching Jonathan Bailey like stalk off to get her a freshman.
You know what? I can't wait for everybody to, and including us, to get to like December, early December, so you can hear Wicked Part 1.
2024.
Oh, you're right. I can't forget it.
Next year.
Sorry, next year.
I'm gonna be old when this comes out.
And when the second part comes out,
we're gonna be old. Oh my god. I'm gonna be 32. Okay.
Okay, so that's our top 10. Some honorable mentions. One I think is an easy top 6, and I'm actually surprised that it wasn't on either of our lists. One of the most iconic Act 2 openers of all time, Masquerade from the Phantom of the Opera.
Masquerade. It is kind of iconic. It just kind of like takes so long to get going.
I'm like, but like, what a moment.
It is a moment. It is Masquerade is a moment. I think I've told the story before, but like when I saw it on Broadway, I've only ever seen Phantom of the Opera once, and I saw it on Broadway, and it took me way too long to realize, like, most of those people were mannequins.
The mannequins. Yeah.
Really took a long time to know that most of those people are mannequins. No, it is iconic. It is one of those ones where it's giving some plot, but not plot. It's giving spectacle.
It's giving spectacle. The costumes are obviously, like, beautiful, and then when the Phantom comes in to, like, ruin their party, mm-hmm. iconic. Like, it's a really fun... Act 2 opener. But yeah, I guess like it's just they're just repeating the same lines over and over, so I guess it's not
the choreography.
Yes.
Okay, one I really love. This is actually kind of an iconic one, and I was kind of regretting not putting it in my top 5, but Whipped Into Shape from Legally Blonde.
I know, I almost had it in my top 5 too.
So good. Like it's so good.
What a high energy.
The choreography.
Act 1 ends on such a high, was so much better. We come right back into Act 2 with a skip rope number.
Yes. This is actually a lot of plot in this song.
It's like Brooke's entire storyline happens.
And then it freezes, and then Callahan is like introducing the case, telling you what's wrong. She's in like all these positions, freezing. So good. Yeah, love that one.
Another one that I love from Shrek, Morning Person. That's a really fun... a tap number. It kind of gives you a view into like what Fiona is like outside of the castle before she actually becomes an ogre. Really, really fun. Another one that I'm like kind of shocked is not on your list, but maybe because we've talked about the show 1,000 times, but On the Right Track from Pippin. Hello.
Yes. So that one has like a bit of a chunky scene before. So that's why I was kind of like,
I guess, but on the cast recording itself, it's on track and then straight into On the Right Track.
Well, yeah, the cast recording doesn't have a chunky scene in it. The cast recording doesn't have a chunky scene.
I don't remember the chunky scene, but it's been a while.
It's not a huge chunky scene, but like, yeah, like it's, I don't know, I don't quite see it as an opening number, but I do
also,
love
what's the one from Company? I thought that might have been on your list.
I do love Side by Side by Side. Yeah, that's really like the birthday party. The birthday party is side by side.
But also the birthday party and everyone's like drugged out.
Yes, it's kind of wacky. Yeah. It's kind of giving Wizomania when you really think about it. can't wait to see how they do Wizomania in the movie. So one that I was listening to last night actually that because I haven't seen the show, I didn't know it was the Act 2 opener, which is why I don't know if I'm not as familiar. I didn't feel as good, but we're going to get to see the show this year, hopefully. Letters, that opens Act 2 of Great Comet, or Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
We've definitely talked about this song before,
because it is probably my favorite song in that cast recording.
It might have been an obsession of yours.
Yes, it is just, or maybe another song was an obsession, but Letters from Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 is my favorite song to listen to from the cast recording. It just slaps. It really mm-hmm. is so fun. The way the like bass of the song goes in. It's really great. And I cannot wait to see the show and see it in action.
Yeah.
Yes. Another few, just to like bring it up.
I have one to end us off. So go through your
Okay, team. Let me just go through a few others that I really love. Ghost, Rain, Hold On.
Great.
So good. One of my favorite, like literally... That Act 1 finale and that Act 2 opener are my two favorite songs from Ghost, the musical.
I had a life.
In the Heights, Sunrise, which was cut from the movie. And I love, again, it's not our main characters, it's our secondary characters, it's our side two characters. You're getting story, but it's also just like romance. It's just easing you back into the story before you have to go. And I just think it's one of the most beautiful songs, like a beautiful, beautiful love song. Falsetto Land, falsettos.
Great. But also so crazy.
Crazy. And I think it's fun. It's fun in that way. One I don't love from a show I do love, but The Guilty Ones from Spring Awakening. Kind of weird. Kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand it, but...
Yeah, but we also kind of, like... I like I Believe, but I don't love I Believe. So we kind of, like, end...
Well, again, functionally, I Believe is kind of a funny... It's a weird song because it's the ensemble singing it as Muenla and Melchior, like, have sex in the hay bales. So it's just kind of a funky scene moment.
But The Guilty Ones kind of... sounds a bit like I Believe, so maybe they were like hoping, well, because you do open act two with like the same way you
it picks up right where you left off.
We pick up with the sex scene, so maybe that's the purpose.
Yes. Another show I don't like, but I actually think this is a good opening number for the show. We saw this show recently, Tara. Why are all the dice with dying? I think it's funny. I think it's good. Like, I think it works.
I can't believe this is even on a list.
When I saw it on this list, I was like, this song actually is good, and I liked it. When we saw it recently, we saw a community theater production. Have we talked about this on here? I can't remember.
We haven't.
We saw a community theater production of Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, which was something.
You know what? We're not going to get into it, but just to get into it slightly, I don't think it's anyone's fault, but the book of the show.
Absolutely. No. The cast was doing what they needed to do.
But seeing a community theater version of a show that you're already met on,
it exposes the holes.
It really shows you why you don't like a show. Yeah,
really exposes.
That's just kind of like a generic thought I have that, like, if you don't like something and then you see it regionally, you still don't like it.
No, you're gonna hate it. You're really gonna like it less. You're gonna like it a lot less. Yeah. Weird racial things happening in that show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, Prince Ali from Aladdin. Prince Hall.
Great.
So good. Bring It On. It's All Happening. Gotta address it.
That could have been on your list.
It's such a good song. Imagine it's the boys. Imagine the band. So good. Book of Mormon. You're Making Things Up Again, Arnold. I think it's actually really good.
There was a moment when I thought that Spooky Mormon Hell Dream opened Act 2, and if it did, it actually might have been on my list.
No. You're Making Things Up Again, which is, I think,
Making Things Up Again.
So another show that I really love, which the opening, act two opener, doesn't quite always work for me, is Next to Normal, Wish I Were Here. A great song, but I feel like it should be like the third song in the act and not the first song in the act.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Another one I'm going to do like three more. I'm going to do three more. Two I like and one I don't like. Okay. From Parade, A Rumblin' and A Rollin'.
Good.
That came up on a playlist last night, and I was like, this song is so good. So good. I'd forgotten about it, and then I heard it, and I was like, okay, this is really great. I really like Steam Heat from The Pajama Game. Again, just a fun, Fosse dance number. No complaints. So good.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
one I don't like, Hygie.
Hyuga.
From Frozen.
Horrible.
The worst song of all time.
I was mortified when I saw Frozen because it was so unexpected. You know, you're like, okay, Oaken's got to be in this somehow, but like, that's not what I thought. Everyone's like running on stage, like wearing these horrible mesh outfits. They're supposed to be like naked, but wearing like I hate it.
Worst.
That number can go.
Worst song ever.
I have one final one to add to this list. It's a show that we love. We have not talked about it in a very long time, but one of maybe the most jarring yet iconic act two opening numbers is Here Comes James Hewitt from Diana the Musical.
That was not in my list at all. I couldn't even fathom what you were about to say, and then when you said it, and I was like in shock when he comes up on that mechanical bull shirtless.
Like nothing I've ever seen before. No, I just remember when we watched this like virtually together during the pandemic, we were like,
should we do that again?
We were just like, what is happening? And I unfortunately had spoiled myself on Twitter, but you didn't know that it was about to happen. What a way to open act two. What ends act one of Diana? Oh, Pretty Pretty Girl. Great. great.
Pretty, pretty girl.
The dress change, great.
The dress, oh my god. Oh, Diana.
Wow, you clearly don't watch Diana as much as I do to have these, like, reactions.
You know, I haven't seen it in a while.
Like the last time I watched it, you were here, which probably was, I don't like, even know like when that
Christmas
was. We just like put it on.
Yeah, it's just a good for the background, a good background moment. So much about Diana is iconic, and isn't it?
Can we talk about the fact that they're doing it in the UK?
Yeah, like a concert thing, and they're having two actresses play Diana, like a young Diana and an older Diana, which I think is an interesting concept.
You know what? Live stream it. I'll pay for it.
And also Gina DeWall. Gina DeWall, miss her. Even though she's in Sweet Todd.
She's on Broadway.
She's in the ensemble. She's like, she's covering.
She's Lovett understudy.
Yeah. Isn't she the bigger woman understudy?
She's both.
Oh, she's both. Okay.
I'll never forget when like a bunch of theater influencers I follow on Twitter were in New York at the same time when Gina DeWall was making her Lovett debut, and they all bought tickets to go. Like, no one was like, gotta wait to see Annaleigh Ashford. They're like, oh my god, this is the moment I've been waiting for.
Gina DeWall. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was our Act 2 opening numbers. We talked about it today very briefly, but I feel like Tearjerkers is like making its way higher and higher on our list of ones that we need to do. It was inspired by the winner of this year's Jimmy Awards, Lauren, singing With You from Ghost, and I was like, that's obviously on my list. Yeah. I won't tell you where, but it's probably pretty high. Although, remember we were talking about this because did I sacrifice it in my favorite flops?
You might have sacrificed it. You used it in your favorite flops.
But I don't know. We didn't make a rule that you can't, like, repeat songs, so we'll see.
Yeah, we don't have a rule. I think that might have been a self-imposed rule that you can embrace.
I remember, like...
It's been time.
I remember the sacrifice happening, because I was distraught about it, but it's been a long time since we recorded a favorite flop. I know. I couldn't believe when Ghost wasn't one of your favorite flops.
I have many a flop.
All of your favorite shows are flops.
American Psycho.
Bring it back. Someone was talking about this the other day on Twitter. They're like, remember American Psycho? Let's revive that.
Well, that, but also because of the other two, Helena York was in American Psycho on Broadway. She was his girlfriend. I can't remember her name, but she's like, Patrick.
Did you watch season two?
No, because it's not.
Oh, right, right, right.
I don't have Crave.
I forgot. Season 3 is out now. I have to watch it. Honestly, this is just a blanket statement recommendation, but like, watch the other two. It's so funny.
Josh Segarra, my favorite.
This was a recommendation to me during the pandemic, and then I'm now ahead.
You are now ahead because I don't have Crave. I might just need to figure out a way, but...
I'll send you a link.
Send me 1-3 movies.
We didn't say that. So
today's gone. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Okay.
You gotta get like a VPN and watch it on HBO Max. Okay, let's move on to our obsession of the week.
So my obsession this week. So this past weekend was a New York City Center Encores production.
We were talking about this on the episode of
The Light in the Piazza, which is an absolutely stunning, stunning musical. And it's, this actually is kind of reminding me, there was a TikTok that I saw of someone who was like, I can't even give them credit, but we have to talk about how a lot of musicals are boring and we love them for it. And this is one of those ones that is kind of boring, but great. And I just think it's beautiful. It's just like,
it's kind of a blind spot for me, not gonna lie.
I just listened to the cast recording, and I just think the way it sweeps, it's written by Adam Gettle, who I don't even know what else he's written, like, not that much.
But it's kind of like a name that is always spoken about.
Yes, really, really beautiful music. He did the score for To Kill a Mockingbird. That's so interesting.
Oh, I kind of remember this.
I kind of remember that, too. He did Floyd Collins, which...
Wait, sorry, I've seen Floyd Collins, like, a version of Floyd Collins.
Yeah, you didn't like it.
No. Back to To Kill a Mockingbird for a second. Have we talked about on this podcast that it's coming to Mirvish after our, like, pipe dream?
We were like, David Mirvish is all over this. And turns out, he is.
He is.
He is all over this.
Sorry, that just reminded me.
It's coming. We're gonna go. I'll see it. Is someone famous doing the tour?
I don't know. But also, to be off track again for a second, they just released a video of Lena Hall singing from In Dreams. Looks good.
I'm excited for this. So basically, and this also kind of ties in to what I'm assuming is going to be your obsession, but the Jimmy Awards.
It's not.
Oh, wow.
But let's talk about it.
The Jimmy Awards competitor last year, Anna Zabelson, is in this production of The Light in the Piazza. And so my obsession is her singing The Beauty Is. There's a video on Playbill's YouTube channel of her just singing it. And this song is
gorgeous.
Stunning. Her voice is stunning. This song is stunning.
He's wanting something. This is praying for it. This is holding fast and keeping fingers crossed. This is counting blessings. This is wondering when I'll see that boy again. If I have a feeling,
this video is just her at a piano. There are like trailers for the production that you can see. And also, when I first heard these songs, actually, maybe that's not true, but I was in Florence last year and this musical takes place in Florence. And the like opening song is this song, like Statues and Stories, and they're in the piazza. I can't remember what the piazza is called, but where they have all the statues, obviously. And that's where a lot of the action takes place, in this piazza. And her hat goes flying, and just the imagery that they create with that song, and then imagining being in that piazza in Florence, it's so beautiful. It's just like a beautiful, slow, kind of gorgeous show that I love. I just think it's like, in my mind, it's a little bit different than a lot of things that we see, and that it allows itself to be slow.
Yeah.
And I like that about it. Not everything is allowed to be this slow. It doesn't always work, but I think it really works really well in this show. Almost like it's on Italian time, this show. It's on.
Also, like, the reviews out of this production. I wonder if it would transfer. I wonder.
I mean, City Center has been sending things to Broadway with consistency recently.
Successfully sending things to Broadway.
I mean, I talked about Anna Zelvison. I mean, we cannot not talk about Ruth Graham Miles. Sometimes I think about her and I like cry, but like
I literally read an article the other day about like everything that happened, and I was like, I can't believe she's still doing what she's doing.
Whenever she like performs, like she's in Sweeney Todd right now, she just took like a week off to do this. And when she did The King and I, like she did The King and I originally on Broadway pre what happened to her, and then she did it in the West End after what happened to her, and I'm like, sometimes you're like, how do you go on? Anyway, now I'm just like crying talking about her. But she's so talented, so beautiful, and, you know, playing a mother in this show. Anyway, whatever. Ugh. And no. I don't have like a fully formed thing on it, but there's been much made of it, like having an Asian family as the central family in this show, which is different. It was originally Victoria Clark and Kelly O'Hara, who are amazing, beautiful, stunning. But I think that having an Asian family at the center of the show, one, because they're beautiful, talented actresses, like why wouldn't they get to play these parts? But also I think it adds to, they are not from the country that they are in. They do not blend in the same way that a white family blends in to the country that they are visiting. And I think that adds to the story in a way that hasn't been done in previous major productions that I've seen. So I really like that choice because I want to see them sing these beautiful songs, but also because I think it adds additional context that is good.
Also, culturally, the like mother, it's mother-daughter, yes?
Yeah, it's a mother and daughter.
The mother-daughter relationship is very different culturally. We kind of actually spoke to Brandon about this with Next to Normal when it was here in Toronto, how like you don't talk about certain things. He didn't talk about certain things growing up in an Asian household.
There was stigma around certain things in Asian culture.
Like, again, I don't know like the deep depths of like the storyline of Light in the Piazza, but I can imagine that like culturally it's very different than like a white family going through this. So like,
it is about a young girl who is developmentally challenged. And so that's kind of, it's interesting. Yeah. I wasn't even thinking from that perspective. I was more just thinking about how you know, they're obviously different from where yeah. they are visiting. But that's an additional, like, huge context that I think really adds. And I think when you're casting, when you, obviously, like, why wouldn't you want to have Ruthie Ann Mollis play this part? But then you have her in this part, and it's added, like, so many different layers to it. Like, it's only improving the show.
Yeah, for sure. Also, not to talk about the Jimmy Awards, because it's not my obsession this week. The Jimmy Awards
I really
were yesterday.
Thought it was. Wondering and won again.
He was so good. Langston, shout out to Langston and Lauren, the winners of this year's Jimmy Awards.
Can't believe someone sang with you and won again. I don't know.
We're really keeping. Someone said we're really gonna keep Ghost alive. Like every time someone sings with you from Ghost, we add an extra 5 years to the life of Ghost. Like it just keeps happening.
Ghost will never die. Ghost will never die.
But she sang a song from Allegiance for her solos. Yes. And that's a song that's not in the, like, Allegiance is not in the roster of songs that people sing for the Jimmy Awards. So, absolutely. Like, shout because out again, for going off the books.
Culturally conscious. Like, not everyone should be singing a song from Allegiance, but for, what's her name again?
She could have sang with you from Ghost, but she didn't.
Anna Zabelson, you know, culturally is appropriate to sing a song from Allegiance, and we love like, what high school is doing Allegiance, or was this her solo song?
No, it was her solo.
Never mind, the high school's not doing
Allegiance. That's what I mean, like, she like was like being intentional aware. About her song choice, whereas like that. Sorry to Langston, but like Wondering, boring.
Tried.
Like it's a boring
it's tired
song
it's tired I'm tired.
You know that, do you know what the winning song was for the guy last year? Take one guess.
Was last year the, like, COVID year where it was from Jesus Christ Superstar?
No. Last year was, like, staged as well.
Was it another JRB moment? It's gotta have been. Mm-hmm. Okay, was it Bridges Again?
No.
What's it called? Songs for New World?
No.
Was it Parade?
It was Parade. What was it?
Not Cancel All Your Parties.
It was Cancel All Your Parties. No! It was This Is Not Over Yet. And I was like, this is a duet.
Well, you just see the first
I literally, last night, me, like, on the, I always love to, like, go to the previous, like, to see what they sung. Because, like, it's been a year, I don't remember. I'm like, this kid sang Parade.
So like, cancel all your parties.
It was good.
I'm sure it was. No, we talked about how Jason R. Brown writes a wonderful character song. He writes a wonderful character song.
That somehow every single teenage boy competing in the Jimmy Awards is like, I am a 40-year-old man.
Literally 3 years ago, someone won Singing Wondering. Ethan something, if I remember his
Ethan
name.
Ethan
Kelso won Singing Wondering. And the girl sang,
Jason Robert
I'm Here.
Brown. Oh, always a lot of I'm Here. I was saying to Steph earlier when we weren't recording, but like, no Astonishings last night, and I was surprised.
Crazy.
The girls' song choices were actually like quite good. The girls just like weren't as talented as the boys. Now that we're here, we're gonna go into it a tiny bit, but like the girls, other than like With You, which is a classic solo song, we've heard it last year, the year before that, someone sang Stupid with Love, which I think is like a fun
a
choice, although
moment.
Piano was hard for that song because there's a lot of piano, so like she was kind of drained of
the
piano.
Did she do like the opt up kind of at the end that they do on tour?
I wish. I know,
like that one, you know.
Oh wait, yeah, I know what you're talking about. No, because the cut was kind of strange from
that's hard.
What I remember. We got I Can't Say No, which is like also
that's a good character
acting moment. We got a song from Shrek that wasn't Who I'd Be, which will lead me into my obsession in 1 second. But it was what was the song called? I was like, he sounded great singing it. Oh, When Words Fail. It was kind of nice because, like, he, in his medley, was Lola in Kinky Boots.
Oh, amazing.
And then singing this song with, like, red long nails. And it's, like, Shrek, like, singing about his feelings. Like, I really appreciated
that. Commit to the bit.
And then we had In My Dreams, Anastasia, which I feel like is becoming a classic Jimmy song. And then we had someone sing Stranger from Big Fish, and I thought he was going to win. So
interesting.
A little bit more offbeat. We've had years where we've had Wondering and It All Fades Away in the same set of solos.
Yeah, and then like Santa Fe.
Yeah. You know who sang Santa Fe? Because I went back to watch his. Casey Likes.
Of course he did. Of course he did. We just saw Matt Doyle sing Santa Fe last week, so...
Yes, we did.
We're in the zone right now.
There was also... I also watched Antonio singing Lost in the Wilderness, which, you know what? A good song choice. No one has really sung that.
Okay, a lot of people... Like, I feel like a lot of people auditioned with Lost in the Wilderness, but I was randomly on Spotify looking at the Children of Eden cast recording, and only, like, two songs are available in Canada. All we can see is, like, Lost in the Wilderness and one other song.
I have that downloaded. Wait, is there a Children of Eden concert happening? Am I making that up?
There's something happening with Children of Eden, but I can't remember.
Isn't it with, like, Norm Lewis and Jordan Fisher?
That sounds right. That sounds right. That sounds right.
I think it's happening. I think that's what Jordan left Sweeney for. So we might be getting Children of Eden eventually on Broadway. Okay, but to lead into my obsession, I can't believe we haven't talked about this because it happened so long ago, but I guess because we didn't watch Miscast Live this year, we actually had no opportunity to talk about this. But my obsession this week, which is like a very crappy video on YouTube that someone took from their fundraising table at Miscast 2023, and it's of Rachel Zegler singing Who I'd Be from Shrek. There was, like, a week when I think you and I, like, sent this around a couple times of, like, have you heard this? And then I was like, yes, I heard this. And then you would send it back to be like, have you heard this? I'm like, yes, I've heard this.
I sort of saw her at the microphone, and she was in green. I'm like,
the Green Reformation two-piece?
The Green Reformation. I'm like, she's singing Who I'd Be. Like, there's no other thing she could be singing right now. She is keeping Shrek the Musical alive, in my opinion.
And thankfully, because honestly, like, I think about this all the time. We've talked about this song many times on this podcast, but, like, what a great song. It is such a well-crafted song.
One of Janine's best.
And, like, you talked about this, I think, on our, like, Way Back One episode, but, like, Brian D'Arcy James is acting when he sings this song. And, like, he doesn't need to be because he's wearing
makeup. I put down my helmet.
But, obviously, Rachel sounds... amazing on this. She's like done it the octave up, but like even she's acting on this. Like, it's just a song that like lets you act on it. Honestly, my favorite moment of the entire performance is like sitting behind her is Bonnie Milligan, because she was also in Miscast, Tony Award winner Bonnie Milligan, because she was in Miscast this year too. And there are like moments when Rachel is singing and Bonnie is just like making like stink face, which is like in the best possible way of like, ew, why do you sound that good? Yeah. Like, it's disgusting that you sound that good. And it's really, like, fun to watch her. But yeah, there's so many videos from Miscast that I never saw this year because...
I know.
Like, Miscast, since the pandemic, you really haven't been serving us.
Well, because they're charging people, which is fair.
I respect it that I could have paid to watch the live stream, but if I wasn't available the one night of the live stream, how am I supposed to watch... No, how am I supposed to watch these videos?
Really? I feel like in previous years it's been available for longer.
Well, they used to put the individual performances on YouTube.
Well, now they want you to pay.
I know. It's still a dream of mine to go to Miscast. It's also a dream of mine to go to the Jimmys. So yeah, that's our obsession of the week. That's also our Act 2 opening numbers. I'm like, what is our next episode? Is it Hadestown? I think it's Hadestown.
It might be.
Pending you seeing it.
If I get to see Hadestown soon.
But in the meantime, you can listen to all of our other episodes. As we said previously, we're also heading to Stratford this summer. There's like a lot that's going on in the next like few weeks. There's a lot that's like on wish lists to see. So you can keep up with us by subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it if you left us a rating and a review on Apple iTunes. And you can also subscribe to us on YouTube and leave us a comment there.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off2BOA Podcast. That's with the number 2. And let us know if there's any Act 2 openers that we missed. Sometimes I feel like we have so many blind spots, so I want to hear about your faves.
Yeah, my like basic of basic top fives here. We're trying, but it's all we listen to.
No, it is hard. There's so much out there. And I feel like my blind spots are really exposed whenever we do episodes like this. I'm like, there's so much I'm missing, so much I don't know.
Yeah. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.